Thank you, worship leader. Good morning to each and every one of us. Happy February. May it bring us all the good goodies of the month. And for those of you whose birthday is in February, we wish you all the best. And may the divine love continue to bless Lord Buddha. So this morning, like the worship leader said, throughout the month of February, our focus of our conversation will be on the wisdom that Lord Buddha shared. And it's good to hear these things, but the most important part is practicing it. That's what will make Buddha happy. That's what will make Jesus happy. That's what will make Krishna happy. That's what will make Divine Mother happy. And of course, that's what will make the Supreme Infinite Spirit happy. Because it makes us a better soul. It makes us aware of who we are. And it nourishes our soul. When I was reading this book, it's called The Teaching of Buddha. I've had this book now for 24 years or so. I think I got it from Hawaii because there wasn't around here. But I think in Hawaii at that time, just like if you go to some hotels here, they put the Bible in the, you know. So I think it was there and they encourage you to have it with you so that, you know, you can spread. And it's been a joyful occasion since then. Now, most Buddhism, not all of them, because they all have their, it's like the Christian sect. They have different, you know, parts of it. They gave Buddha a title called Shakyamuni Buddha, is to reflect the tribe that he came from. So I will just read from this Bible. Shakya clansmen, that's the tribe that, dwelt along the Rohini River, which flows among the southern foothills of the Himalayas. Sometimes we forget Buddha is a Hindu man. Just like Jesus was Jewish, he wasn't a Christian man. So the king of the Shakya clansmen, their king is Suddhodana Gautama. Let me repeat that. Suddhodana Gautama established his capital at Kapilavastu, and there had a great castle built and ruled wisely, winning the acclaim of his people. Because that's usually happen when you have a loving emperor, king, president. People will be happy. They don't like people to, they don't like the ones that oppresses them or takes away their rights. They like the one that looks after their interest, not just the interest of the powerful. The queen's name was Maya. We all know what Maya means. She was the daughter of the king's uncle, who was also the king of a neighboring district of the same Shakya clan. So you could see that, I think in the Western world and some of the other worlds, they feel they should intermarry. This, in the old days, everybody intermarries among themselves, you know. So if you see people saying they want the purity of their race and all of that, don't stone them. They are still living in the past because that's the way it was then. the Hebrews, the Jews, the Israelis, they don't want to marry the Philistines, even though you find that they all came from the same, so. For 20 years, they had no children. But one night, Queen Maya had a strange dream in which she saw a white elephant entering into her womb through the right side of her chest. And she became pregnant. The king and the people looked forward with anticipation to the birth of a royal child. According to their custom, the queen returned to her parents' home for the birth. And on her way, in the beautiful spring sunshine, she took a rest in the Lumbini Garden. Reading these stories, one of the things I enjoy and admire is that the Holy One seems to have the same similar story somehow. Because either their families are very pious, and either they didn't, like in this case, she couldn't get pregnant, but then she had a dream. So don't ignore your dream when it shows up. It might be things that will make you very happy if you follow through. We remember Mother Mary, right? The angel came, and this one, it was the white elephant that came. All about her were, oh, let me just make sure I didn't skip a page. Okay. So she took a rest in the Lumbini Garden. All about her were the Ashoka blossoms. In delight, she reached her right arm out to pluck a branch, and as she did so, a prince was born. All expressed their heartfelt delight with the glory of the queen and her princely child. Heaven and earth rejoiced. This memorable day was the 8th day of April. The joy of the king was extreme, and he named the child Siddhartha, which means every wish fulfilled. That's why it's always good to know the background of the ones who have inspired us. Because most of what we're learning now, either we've heard it or we don't know the details, but now we are. So when you hear Siddhartha Gautama Buddha, you know it means every wish fulfilled. So you might want to name yourself Siddhartha too. In the palace of the king, however, delight was followed quickly by sorrow. For after several days, the lovely queen Maya suddenly died. Her younger sister, Mahaprajapati, became the child's foster mother and brought him up with loving care. A hermit called Asita, who lived in the mountains not far away, noticed a radiance about the castle. Interpreting it as a good omen, he came down to the palace and was shown the child. Does this remind us of Jesus' birth? He predicted, "This prince, if he remains in the palace, when grown up, will become a great king and subjugate the whole world." In other words, he will govern the world, he will rule the world. Just like the Messiah, his world wasn't physical world. He already came from that. He's going to rule the world spiritually through the wisdom that came through him. But if he forsakes the court life to embrace a religious life, he will become a Buddha, a savior of the world. So, in other words, when you hear Buddha, it means the savior. And as we progress during this month, you will find that Buddha is It's not a physical form. Doesn't have any form. Buddha represents enlightenment, liberation, the freedom that we were all created with. At first, the king was pleased to hear the prophecy, but later he started to worry about the possibility of his only son leaving the palace to become a homeless recluse. When you look at the king's father, will you blame him? How many of us, we have a child and you want him to be wandering down the street where you could give her some food, give him and all of that, you know? At the age of 7, the prince began his lessons in the civil and military arts. But his thoughts more naturally tended to other things. One spring day, he went out of the castle with his father. Together, they were watching a farmer at his plowing when he noticed a bird descended to the ground and carried off a small worm, which had been turned up by a farmer's plow. He sat down in the shade of a tree and thought about it, whispering to himself, "Alas, do all living creatures kill each other?" Well, don't hide your feelings. Some of us have said that when we see what's going on around us, "God, why won't you do something? Why are you allowing your children to kill and oppress each other?" The prince, who had lost his mother so soon after his birth, was deeply affected by the tragedy of these little creatures. This spiritual wound deepened day by day as he grew up. Like a little scar on a young tree, the suffering of human life became more and more deeply ingrained in his mind. The king was increasingly worried as he recalled the hermit's prophecy and tried in every possible way to cheer the prince and to turn his thoughts in other directions. If you were a parent, you would do the same thing. The king arranged the marriage of the prince at the age of 19 to the princess Yashodhara. She was the daughter of Supra Buddha, the lord of Devadaha Castle, and the brother of the late Queen Maya. You see, they are all now married into each other again. So in other words, he just married his own cousin. For 10 years, in the different pavilions of spring, autumn, and the rainy season, the prince was immersed in rounds of music, dancing, and pleasure. But always his thoughts returned to the problem of suffering, as he pensively tried to understand the true meaning of human life. The luxuries of the palace, this healthy body, this rejoicing youth, what do they mean to me? He thought, someday we may be sick, we shall become aged or aged. From death there is no escape. Pride of youth, pride of health, pride of existence, all thoughtful people should cast them aside. A man struggling for existence will naturally look for something of value. There are two ways of looking, a right way and a wrong way. If he looks in the wrong way, he recognizes that sickness, old age, and death are unavoidable. But he seeks the opposite. If he looks in the right way, he recognizes the true nature of sickness, old age, and death, and he searches for meaning in that which transcends all human sufferings. In my life of pleasures, I seem to be looking in the wrong way. These are the thoughts that was going through Gautama at that time. Thus, the spiritual struggle went on in the mind of the prince, until his only child, Rahula, was born when he was 29. So Lord Buddha had a child. This seemed to bring things to a climax, for he then decided to leave the palace and look for the solution of his spiritual unrest in the homeless life of a mendicant. Mendicant, the best way we can express it here, is like a beggar. He's actually a beggar, a homeless person who goes from place to place, you know, asking you, please have mercy, give me some money. Not the guy that shows up at your door trying to sell you some roof shingles, you know. He left the castle one night with only his charioteer, that is his cab driver, Chandaka, and his favorite horse, the Snow White Kantaka. His anguish did not end, and many devils tempted him, saying, "You will do better to return to the castle, for the whole world will soon be yours." But he told the devil that he did not want the whole world. So he shaved his head, like Baba Moses did, and turned his steps toward the south, carrying a begging bowl in his hand. Usually in mystical things, when you turn yourself to the south, that is the future. You are living. The north is your base, it's where everything comes. It's the earth element. The future is the south. So I may encourage all of you to go shave your head. Just be like Baba Moses. The prince first visited the hermit Bhagavar and watched his ascetic practices. He then went to Arada Kalama and Udraka Ramaputra to learn their methods of attaining enlightenment through meditation. But after practicing them for a time, he became convinced that they would not lead him to enlightenment. Finally, he went to the land of Magadha and practiced asceticism in the forest of Yurivilva on the banks of the Nairajana River, which flows by the Gaya village. An ascetic person is one who has renounced the worldly things, you know. They do fast, meditate, thinking they have that discipline that will lead, you know. It's like when you meet some spiritual practitioners, they flog themselves, you know, with whips or with blade and all of that. So we would call that an ascetic. But Lord Buddha wasn't beating himself up. So he's like the monks of today. The method of his practice was unbelievably rigorous. He spurred himself on with the thought that no ascetic in the past, none in the present, and none in the future ever has practiced or ever will practice more honestly than I do. So in other words, even Lord Buddha had to find the truth. He was committed. He threw everything in. Still, the prince could not realize his goal. Let's remember, his goal was enlightenment. After 6 years in the forest, he gave up the practice of asceticism. He went bathing in the river and accepted a bowl of milk from the hand of Sujata, a maiden who lived in the neighboring village. The five companions who had lived with the prince during these 6 years of his ascetic practice were shocked that he should receive milk from the hand of a maiden. They thought him degraded and left him. What does this tell us? When the inner one in you, the God who created, is moving you towards a direction, your old friends might fall by. They might tell you, oh, no, he's lost it. He's out of the reserve, whatever it is. Trust what is in you more than what is outside, even more than the priest or the, you know, because if God is in the priest, that same God is in you. Thus, the prince was left alone. He was still weak But at the risk of losing his life, he attempted yet another period of meditation, saying to himself, "Blood may become exhausted, flesh may decay, bones may fall apart, but I will never leave this place until I find the way to enlightenment." That is what we call commitment. You know, is it New Hampshire? What's that word?
Live free or die.
Live free or die. I think Lord Buddha is, that's what he was doing there. If he doesn't find it, he's not going to, you know, he would rather die. It was an intense and incomparable struggle for him. He was desperate and filled with confusing thoughts. Dark shadows overhung his spirit, and he was beleaguered by all the layers of the devils. Carefully and patiently, he examined them one by one and rejected them all. It was a hard struggle indeed, making his blood run thin, his flesh fall away, and his bones crack. Remember Jesus' temptation too? One thing I learned on this journey is that if you really want to make a difference in your own life, we're not talking about others, to know God, you got to give something. I mean, there is a mark. There is something that is, to me, I feel is an offering. So it's not just roll over and do it. Yeah, there's something. Anyone who's ever practiced deeply and then feel that presence, there is something they offer, you know, physically or mentally, but usually physically. So, like Yogananda would say, if you think your little practice was going to get you God, then you got something else coming. You got to give it all you got. And then, before you know, voila, you are one with God. So it was a hard struggle indeed, making his blood run thin, his flesh fall away, and his bones crack. But when the morning star appeared in the eastern sky, the struggle was over, and the prince's mind was as clear and bright as the breaking day. He had at last found the path to enlightenment. It was December 8th. Those of you who were born in December, remember this. It was December 8th when the prince became a Buddha at 35 years of age. For some, you can be a Buddha at 18, you can be a Buddha at 90, you just have to follow your, you know. But it's going to take everything you want. And to me, what Buddha, this story of Buddha is telling us, don't give up on yourself. You might be closer than you think, but if you don't give up, you will attain that which your heart seek to know. From this time on, the prince was known by different names. Some spoke of him as Buddha, the perfectly enlightened one. That's me. Some call him the perfectly enlightened one. Tathagata. Some spoke of him as Shakyamuni, the sage of the Shakya clan. Others called him the world honored one. So another, take your pick. Just like Jesus being called the Christ. He went first to Rigadava in Varanasi. Varanasi is still there today. That's where Baba Yogananda, Baba Lahiri. Sure. In Varanasi, where the five mendicants or monks who had lived with him during the 6 years of his ascetic life were staying. So that was the first place he went. At first, they shunned him. But after they had talked with him, they believed in him and became his first followers. So sometimes you grow past your friends. They don't want to talk to you, but when the universe wants to bring you guys out, back, you work it out. And if you don't work it out, well, you move on. But that is what happens. If the Spirit of God is in you, people can feel it. They can sense that. Even those who criticize you, it doesn't stop them from criticizing you, but they will know you. There's something there. So they became his first followers, the five monks. He then went to Rajagriha Castle and won over King Bimbisara, who had always been his friend. From there, he went about the country, living on alms and teaching men to accept his way of life. So he didn't run back to his castle to say, okay, yeah, manicure my feet and do this, bring me, you know. So he's going from village to village. Men responded to him as the thirsty seek water and the hungry needs food. Two great disciples, Sariputra and Moggallana, and their 2,000 followers came to him. At first, the Buddha's father, King Suddhodana, still inwardly suffering because of his son's decision to leave the palace, remained aloof. Don't think I'm going to give you any money to, you know, you abandon your priesthood. But then became his faithful disciple too. Mahaprajapati, the Buddha's stepmother, and Princess Yashodhara, his wife, and all the members of the Shakya clan began to follow him. Multitudes of others also became his devoted and faithful followers. For 45 years, the Buddha went about the country preaching and persuading men, usually men means women and children, to follow his way of life. But when he was 80 years old, at Vaisali, and on his way from Rajagriha to Shravasti, he became ill and predicted that after 3 months, he would enter Nirvana. Remember, Jesus was after 3 days, he would be raised from dead. So, these stories always have some similarities, don't they? So when you are sick, don't think God has abandoned you. If Buddha, who has now tasted enlightenment, got sick, you know, it's like death has no hold over anyone. Once you know, it's something all of us have to go through. After 3 months, he will enter Nirvana. Still, he journeyed on until he reached Pava, where he fell seriously ill from some food offered by Chanda, a blacksmith. Eventually, in spite of great pain and weakness, he reached the forest that bordered Kusinagara. Lying between two large sala trees, he continued teaching his disciples until his last moment. So for those of us called on this path, there is no retirement. There is no Medicare, no Medicaid, no, what's the other one?
Social Security.
You walk till to your last breath, to your last bone. So next time you're trying to ask me, when will I retire? Well, here goes Lord Buddha for you, answering for all of us. Lying between two large sala trees, he continued teaching his disciples until his last moment. Thus, he entered into perfect tranquility after he had completed his work as the world's greatest teacher. Under the guidance of Ananda, the Buddha's favorite disciple, the body was cremated by his friends in Kusinagara. Before I finish, because we only have one paragraph, one of the things that happens when a person is cremated, especially the holy one, is that it frees them from being able to access that physical body attachment. because within my circle, there are mystical people who, after they've passed on, God has used them to establish things. So when the world they've left behind, and they worry that they might not follow through. So when they are meditating, the person who is the founder shows up if they are doing special rituals. And so at a point, I don't want to name names, at the point they had to banish this well-known person because he's interfering. Look, you've done your job. Whether it goes on, whether it falls apart, you're not supposed to worry about that because the work belongs to God and it belongs to those people because how they do it might be how they will also grow to be like, you know. So when they, if that person had been cremated, they wouldn't have been able to do that. Yeah. Because then they take the body, they show up while you are meditating. You know it. Yeah. You know. So now it doesn't mean those true masters who they are not worried about what they left behind. When they want to, because it's needed, maybe for one, the disciple, they will show up. They know how to manufacture the body that they will come so that then you recognize them. Like Sri Yukteswar when he showed up to Yogananda or Lahiri and all of that. So, but for those, they might be enlightened, but they are not, you know, they still have that attachment to cremate their body. That way they won't intrude. So you get the gist. Don't be expecting Baba Moses, just cremate him to heaven. He's not taking that belly back. Yeah. Okay, 7 neighboring rulers, as well as King Ajatasattu, demanded that the relics be divided among them. In other words, now look at that. When Buddha was alive, they're not going to fight, but now they are fighting over his body. Apparently, they're not following his examples, aren't they? The people of Kusanagara at first refused, and the dispute even threatened to end in war. But under the advice of a wise man named Drona, the crisis passed and the relics were divided among the 8 great countries. The ashes of the funeral pile and the earthen jar that contained the relics were also given to 2 other rulers to be likewise honored. Thus, 10 great towers commemorating the Buddha were built to enshrine his relics and ashes. To wrap this up, these are one of the few first teachings or the last teaching of the Buddha. So before he died, beneath the Sala tree at Kusinagara, in his last words to his disciples, the Buddha said, "Make of yourself a light. Rely upon yourself. In order to be that light that you are created with, make of yourself a light. Rely upon yourself. Do not depend upon anyone else. Make my teachings your light. Rely upon them. Do not depend upon any other teaching. Consider your body. Think of its impurity. Knowing that both its pain and his delight are like causes of suffering." In other words, if things are going well for you and you attach yourself, then you will cause yourself suffering. So he's talking about attachments now. Whether it's pain or pleasure, just be living that balance. How can you indulge in his desires, the desire of suffering and pleasure? That's what he's saying. Consider yourself, your true self. Think of his transcendent, in other words, is not permanent. Everything moves on. How can you fall into delusion about it and cherish pride and selfishness, knowing that they must all end in inevitable suffering? Whether it's pride, whether it's selfishness, don't go there. Consider all substances. Can you find among them any enduring self? In other words, are they permanent? No. Are they not all aggregates that sooner or later will break apart and be scattered? Do not be confused by the universality of suffering, but follow my teaching, even after my death, and you will be rid of pain. Do this, and you will indeed be my disciples. My disciples, the teaching that I have given you are never to be forgotten or abandoned. They are always to be treasured. They are to be thought about. They are to be practiced. If you follow these teachings, you will always be happy. The point of the teachings is to control your own mind. Keep your mind from greed, and you will keep your behavior right. Your mind pure and your words faithful. By always thinking about the transiency of your life, you'll be able to resist greed and anger and will be able to avoid all evils. If you find your mind tempted and so entangled in greed, you must suppress and control that temptation. Remember Jesus saying, "Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." Be the master of your own mind. A man's mind may make him a Buddha, or it may make him a beast. Misled by error, one becomes a demon. Enlightened, one becomes a Buddha. Therefore, control your mind and do not let it deviate from the right path. You should respect each other. Follow my teaching and refrain from disputes. You should not, like water and oil, repel each other, but should, like milk and water, mingle together. Study together, learn together, practice my teaching together. Do not waste your mind and time in idleness and quarreling. Enjoy the blossoms of enlightenment in their season and harvest the fruit of the right path. The teachings which I have given you are gained by following the path myself. Action speaks louder than words. You should follow these teachings and conform to their spirit in every occasion. Not the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. If you neglect them, it means that you have never really met me. It means that you are far from me, even if you are actually with me. But if you accept and practice my teachings, then you are very near me, even though you are far away. My disciples, my end is approaching. A parting is near, but do not lament. Do not cry your eyeballs out. Life is ever changing. None can escape the dissolution of the body. This I am now to show by my own death, my body falling apart like a dilapidated cart. Do not vainly lament, but realize that nothing is permanent, and learn from eat the emptiness of human life. Do not cherish the unworthy desire that the changeable might become unchanging. The demon of worldly desires is always seeking chances to deceive the mind. If a viper lives in your room and you wish to have a peaceful sleep, you must first chase it out. Won't you? If you see a snake that's gonna, if you don't chase it out, you're not gonna be sleeping. Or spider, or roaches, or rats. You must break the bonds of worldly passions and drive them away as you would a viper. You must positively protect your own mind. My disciples, my last moment has come, but do not forget that death is only the end of the physical body, not your soul. The body was born from parents and was nourished by food, just as inevitable as sickness and death. But the true Buddha is not a human body. It is enlightenment. A human body must die, but the wisdom of enlightenment will exist forever in the truth of the scriptures, of the teaching, of the Dharma, and in the practice of the teaching of the Dharma. He who sees merely my body does not truly see me. Only he who accepts my teaching truly sees me. After my death, the Dharma, the teaching, shall be your teacher. Follow the Dharma and you will be true to me. During the last 45 years of my life, I have withheld nothing from my teachings. There is no secret teaching, no hidden meaning. Everything has been taught openly and clearly. My dear disciples, this is the end. In a moment, I shall be passing into Nirvana. This is my instruction. Just like Jesus said, if you follow my teachings, then you are my own, right? You are my father, mother, yeah. The Holy Ones, they all speak from the same fountain of wisdom. We thank Lord Buddha and his life. May we be worthy to follow in practice. And may God bless all of us. Till next Sunday, I wish you all well.